This month marks the 400th anniversary of the first documented sales of enslaved people in the American colonies. In 1619, more than 20 African people were sold at a port near Jamestown, Virginia. Most of us learned something about slavery during our time in school, but our next guests say that in many cases, we're not doing enough to engage students with one of the toughest but most important issues in American history. They're both contributors to the 1619 Project from the New York Times, looking into the ways slavery continues to impact life in the United States. Nikita Stewart is a reporter covering social services for the New York Times. Her piece for the project is called "Why Can't We Teach Slavery Right in American Schools?" Nikita, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Jasmine Hughes is an associate editor for the New York Times Magazine. She co-wrote "A Brief History of Slavery That You Didn't Learn in School." Jasmine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Well, Nikita, let's start with you. How are schools, how are curriculum falling short when it comes to teaching about American slavery?
Oh, goodness. It starts from the very beginning when we're, you know, kindergartners and in elementary school, and Black History Month rolls around and we learn about a handful of basically heroes. You know, we learn about Harriet Tubman. We learn about Frederick Douglass. We learn about white abolitionists as well, but we don't really explain why it was so important for the people who were enslaved. We don't really explain what they were running from, what they were trying to escape, mostly because teachers are fearful of, you know, hurting the children or upsetting them in some way. But there has to be a way to teach enslavement before high school when our textbooks, unfortunately, are also falling short.
And Jasmine, in the piece you co-wrote, you write about not just what many slaves were trying to escape, but we often ignore that they were trying to escape. Can you talk about the history of resistance from the earliest days of slavery that we tend to overlook?
Yes, to Nikita's point, there is this, you know, this simplified, sanitized version of slavery that we're taught. And I co-wrote the section with a curator at the National Museum of African American History and Culture, this woman, Mary Elliott, and something that Mary found very important was the theme of resistance and rebellion throughout the period of time of slavery. And so we covered things from the Stono Rebellion, which is one of the first rebellions, if I'm correct, of enslaved people, to Nat Turner's Rebellion, which people are sort of familiar with because of the movie and it coming up in pop culture. But there was absolutely an enduring sense, an enduring culture, and an endurance of rebellion that I never learned in my public school. And I learned so much of this, you know, just in the past couple of months covering this story.
And Nikita, one issue that comes up in the 1619 Project and elsewhere was this sanitizing of the slavery era that happened kind of after Reconstruction up till about World War I, where there was this very widespread effort to tell an alternate story where slavery wasn't as bad as people thought and the South wasn't as bad a place. Can you talk about how that changed the way we as Americans looked back at slavery?
Oh, yes, for sure. You know, after the Civil War, even before the Civil War, there were, during the Civil War, there was this kind of school of thought that Black people were inferior and that basically they deserved to be enslaved, which is a very racist view and just backwards and ignorant. But that continued, especially after the war, when particularly white Southerners were looking for a way to, kind of save face, if you will. And so all of these Confederate generals became heroes in what is known as the Lost Cause. And there were plenty of books written about it until, you know, you write about something long enough, it becomes true. And so that school of thought continued along with later in like the 1900s through the 1930s. There was a professor at Columbia University, William Dunning, and his belief was that Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, had failed in part because Black people didn't have the intellectual capacity to participate in a democracy. And these are you know, schools of thought that fueled the Jim Crow laws, that fueled things that we are still seeing today. And they've stuck with us, and it's time to correct the record with facts and not beliefs of inferiority.
Talking to Nikita Stewart and Jasmine Hughes, they're both contributors to the New York Times 1619 Project, looking back at the history of American slavery and the parts of the story we don't necessarily hear today. Jasmine, a lot of times I think in the textbooks, in school programs, slavery is kind of a sidebar to this period in American history. Can you talk about, it's clear again in the piece you co-wrote, how central slavery was to the developing American economy?
I don't think that we would have the America that we know today without the foundation of slavery, right? Even if we're looking at it purely economically. The finances that were that were culled from that institution is what led to the foundation of this country. In owning slaves, or enslaved people rather, various white slaveholders were able to accrue not only wealth but power and political influence. And they are many of the initial senators and congresspeople of the foundation of this country. And so you're absolutely right. It is sort of taught as a week-long portion of American history, or you just learn it during Black History Month. But I think the aim of the 1619 Project, both the section that Nikita and I worked on and the magazine itself, is to show how central slavery was to the foundation of America.
And Jasmine, I think there's a quote from Abraham Lincoln who talked about, hey, in the North, if you're wearing clothing made out of cotton, you are still a participant in slavery in some ways. It wasn't just something that affected the Southern economy, right?
Absolutely. And like Nikita said, there are all these ways in which we twist and contort the history in order to make ourselves feel better. So if we think of slavery only being about cotton, it's a little easier to swallow. Or that it only took place in the South, then it's a little bit easier to stomach. But none of that is true. I mean, I think that there's an argument to be made that every living American who was, granted rights by the Constitution, so we're not counting enslaved people, was benefiting from slavery in one way or another.
Nikita, what do we lose in 2019 if we're not paying attention to these elements of the story of slavery that you two and the others, other contributors to the project, talk about?
We lose the ability to look at modern day discrimination. If we look at this country's history, we can better understand, you can even make a connection to the Black Lives Matter movement. You can look at mass incarceration in a different way. You can look at redlining in a different way. There are all of these discriminatory practices that are actually vestiges of the period of enslavement in this country. And so until students learn about the history, the true history, they're not going to understand what is happening today. The 1619 Project has been absolutely incredible, and it's been just the most valuable experience for me to be a part of, because it is changing the way teachers view their curriculum. Parents are going to the schools and saying, can you teach this? Can you incorporate this? Are we already talking about this? And it is at least starting a conversation about looking beyond our textbooks. And, there's lots of information out there now. It's on the internet. Not all of the information is accurate on the internet, so you have to be careful. But a lot of teachers are now turning to primary sources in order for students to get a better understanding of their history.
We're talking to Nikita Stewart and Jasmine Hughes, both contributors to the New York Times 1619 Project. We're looking at what gets taught about the history of slavery in the United States and what often gets overlooked. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been reading the elements of this New York Times 1619 Project on the history of slavery? What do you think? What did it make you think? And what do you remember about how American slavery was taught when you were in school? Are there things you wish you'd learned then but didn't? If you're a teacher, maybe getting ready to go back to school and teach American history yourself, we'd love to hear your perspective on this as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Jasmine Hughes and Nikita Stewart of the New York Times, looking at the ways schools can do better at teaching the history of slavery in the United States and why it matters 400 years after the first recorded instance of the sale of slaves on the territory that became the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there is room for improvement in how we teach students about slavery? What do you remember from your class? If you're a student now, what do you think about what's being taught there? If you're a teacher, what's happening in the school you're working in? Do you try to go beyond the textbook to teach more about slavery? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And following up on what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, that idea of going beyond the textbook. And Nikita, I think you wrote about that, how teachers are supplementing what the incomplete information they're seeing in the textbooks available.
Yes, they are. A lot of teachers are taking field trips to museums in researching this essay. I went to Mount Vernon, where, it's George Washington's home, where the lessons go beyond George Washington's teeth to more information about how he got those teeth and, about the enslaved people who he enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
Then also I went to a plantation in Westchester County, which is just north of New York City, where teachers can take their students to learn about the enslaved people there who, made food for to send to the Caribbean and to the South so that people who were in the slave trade and the people who were enslaved could eat. I turned to the Gilder Lehrman Institute here in New York City, where every first Friday, teachers K through 12 can go and look at primary sources, documents, so that they can just learn a little more beyond those textbooks. And I myself also turned to the Library of Congress, where the slave narratives that were part of a project in the 1930s, my great-grandfather was in those documents and, straight from his memory and in his words.
And that was there was an amazing moment in writing about that. He said, yeah, my master, my owner wasn't too bad. They only whipped us, but not to the point where we bled.
Yes.
But yes. Staggering.
Yes, it was. It was difficult to read those words. And I wondered who was actually interviewing him. I wondered if he was worried about what to say. I wondered if he thought he was supposed to be whipped. It was heartbreaking to read, but it was important for me to understand the brutality of slavery in this country.
And Jasmine, Nikita had mentioned George Washington in the piece you co-wrote. You talk about Thomas Jefferson and other founding fathers, I guess, for the most part of the country, who are in one lens seen as heroes for their efforts toward human liberty and founding the United States. But the slavery side of the story, the fact that they were slave owners themselves in many, maybe most cases, gets overlooked. Can you talk about that?
Oh, it's totally overlooked, right? I think that the first bit of this conversation that I experienced was, I guess now 3-4 years ago, after the hit Broadway musical Hamilton came out. And it was sort of like, this is so cool, but what if Hamilton, like, do we talk about Hamilton's, like, interaction with slave labor? Because there's definitely something there. It was very strange. And so I definitely returned to that over the course of this project. I think, and I could be a little wrong on this, but I believe 12 of the first 18 presidents were slaveholders, which is not something we ever learn on President's Day or, you know, in the fun facts on the back of a cereal box that we that you read at the breakfast table. It just, it's like, again, it is so overwhelming to think about absolutely how instrumental the slave trade was to the foundation of this country. But at the same time, it was so sort of mundane is not the right word, but just so commonplace that, you know, that people didn't even really think about it. And, you know, in the sort of in the same like outrageous ways that we might consider it right now.
Talking to Nikita Stewart and Jasmine Hughes. They're both contributors to the 1619 Project at the New York Times, looking back at American slavery and its legacy. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Lynn joins us from Eau Claire. Lynn, hi.
Hi. Fantastic show. Thank you very much. I was raised during, I'm 64 years old. I'm an old white woman raised in the Chicago area. We were well aware of social ills, but we weren't aware of the why. We didn't. Nobody taught us anybody else's history, but our own narrow view of the world. Thanks to becoming aware, I was turned on to Zora Neale Hurston. My God, opened up my whole world to be able to see the world through somebody else's eyes, somebody else that isn't you, that isn't of Irish white Catholic descent is an amazing thing to do. This is something you need to embrace your ugly past so you can get on with your much less than ugly, exciting, all-encompassing future.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. Jasmine, is that your hope for the 1619 Project, that more eyes get opened as Lynn's were?
Absolutely. First of all, Lynn, I love Zora Neale Hurston. I have a tattoo of her on my arm. So,
oh, wow.
Number one. Number two, yes, I absolutely agree. Again, like, you know, the 1619 Project doesn't purport to replace any sort of scholarship or anthropology like Zora has done or any of, like, the litany of work that's out there. But we do hope, you know, that it is a stepping stone, that you start with this and then you move on to the rest of the work that's out there, because there is so much.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. That said, I think there's a lot of reaction where people don't want to hear these stories, Nikita, and there's been a thing online where people put their reviews of taking a plantation tour recently and say, what's with all the talk about the slavery and how bad it was on these plantations? Have you, since these pieces came out, since this project came out, seen a lot of pushback in that way? People kind of want to keep this at arm's length?
There has been pushback, and, you know, it just goes back to, you know, the way some folks were raised. So many of us didn't learn about it in school. And you think about being in that kindergarten class and learning the presidents and that, you know, enslavement is not on the list of their accomplishments. And so when you start learning more, I think the problem is that some people feel that if they acknowledge enslavement, that it is a reflection of them, and it is. And that's okay to have that reflection and then be able to empathize in some way. You know, there are so many people who are like, I don't want to talk about it because I didn't do it. But, you know, you are still benefiting in some way from what has happened, or you're still being affected by what happened. So I hope that readers who have rejected, you know, and it's not even a matter of them rejecting it after reading it. Some of them haven't read it at all. You know, I think there was someone who appeared on one of the cable channels and was like, well, I haven't read it, but I just know it's bad. And so we certainly don't want you to do that. You know, please read and then engage in a meaningful discussion. You might not agree with everything, but it's on the table for a discussion.
And Jasmine, I think a common response to criticism, especially of the George Washingtons and Thomas Jeffersons, is, well, okay, yes, we don't like slavery, but it was a different time, judging by the standards of the time. In your piece, clearly a lot of people at that time were already very critical of slavery. A lot of black people, obviously, and some white people as well.
Oh, yeah. Black people have been people forever. So it's sort of difficult. No, I've totally heard that argument, but it is difficult to really wrap your head around the idea that, like, well, you know, black people used to be considered inferior, and that was just – that was what everybody was doing, right? There was staunch abolitionism both in black communities and white communities and beyond that. And so – being opposed to slavery was no new, unusual, or uncommon thing. And there were many, many options for people to not partake in it, but it is what it is.
And Nikita, just as we start to wrap up, does your work on this open the next door? Do you want to do a follow-up to this project now?
Oh, goodness. I think there are things in the works because I do have a regular beat. I cover social services. But, you know, I find that, you know, now I even look at the other stories that I write about. I think about not only enslavement, but just race, class, et cetera, that, you know, can sometimes define what's happening in all of our institutions, unfortunately. And I think that I approach stories with at least asking the question, you know, how does this relate to class or race? It might not necessarily be something that I include in the story, but it's something that I'm thinking about.
We'll leave it there. Nikita, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jasmine, thanks a lot for being on the show with us.
Of course. Thank you so much.
That's Nikita Stewart and Jasmine Hughes. They're both contributors to the New York Times 1619 Project, looking at the legacy of slavery in the United States. They're with us to talk about how we teach the history of slavery.